I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of the PBS investigative series Frontline, and you're listening to the Frontline Dispatch. On this episode, in collaboration with PRI's The World, we have a story from the migrant caravan that dominated the news last fall. It's a story about a boy from El Salvador who came up in the caravan trying to reach his mother. Our reporter is Monica Campbell.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation Journalism Initiative, committed to excellence.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler.
Support for Frontline Dispatch comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, dedicated to providing compassionate care and cancer specialists who are experienced in the cancer you have. When you hear the word cancer, their team is ready. Learn more at massgeneral.org/cancer.
It's November, and I'm crossing the border into Tijuana. I'm looking for a kid I'd heard about from El Salvador who came up in the migrant caravan. He's 15 and alone and waiting for a chance to enter the U.S. and ask for asylum. There's a U.S. helicopter overhead and Mexican soldiers and police around. And there's this plaza and a group of migrants are gathered around a man with a notebook. He's calling out numbers from the notebook. It's a way of creating a line of sorts for the thousands of migrants here. If your number's called, you can go up to the border to U.S. officials and ask for asylum. But the kid I'm looking for, his name's Vladdy, isn't here. He can't come here. If he does, Mexican officials can pick him up and even deport him because he's a teenager on his own without papers. So he avoids this place. He's holed up in a shelter nearby.
So I'm heading to the youth shelter where Vladdy is staying.
The shelter's this small concrete building on a busy street. It's just 10 minutes from the border. I find Vladdy in the courtyard hanging out.
Mucho gusto. It's nice to meet you. Un gusto conocerle. ¿Cómo va?
He's slim with brown eyes, wearing a gray sweatshirt, basketball shorts. He's got a baseball hat, one of those flat-brimmed ones turned to the side. The clothes are all donated, but he likes them. They're trendy street clothes. This shelter's for teenagers like him. Many of them came up in the same caravan he did. He shows me around.
Area for taking a shower and washing up. There's a small garden, there's a parking lot.
And there are certain rules here he's got to follow.
Primera regla es prohibido fumar.
No smoking.
Consumir bebidas alcohólicas.
No alcohol.
Hay una hora límite para regresar a las 6:30 cuando uno está lejos. Ya si uno quiere
salir. By 6:30, if they want to go out, they need to ask permission.
The rules are no joke. This part of Mexico can be dangerous. It's no place for a kid like Vladdy on his own. A couple of weeks after I meet him, two kids staying at the same shelter were found murdered not far away. Their bodies were found on the side of the road. But El Salvador wasn't safe either. He starts telling me why he left.
Porque fui amenazado por las pandillas.
He says because he was threatened by the gangs.
Ya uno que ya tiene 14, 15 años así ya corre peligro, porque ya las pandillas lo piensan a querer involucrar, a lo quieren poner a postear cosas así, pues.
He said that when you turn 14 or 15 where he lives in El Salvador, then you're ready to be recruited, you feel that pressure to be recruited, and that's just a fact of life of where he lives. ¿Y qué más?
Y pues empieza a amenazarnos que va a matar a nuestra familia si no nos unimos o si no nos mata a nosotros.
He says that they'll start to threaten, that they were threatening us. They said they would kill us, kill out my family if we didn't join them.
But he didn't join the gang. His mom told him to join the migrant caravan instead. So he left El Salvador, along with his grandmother, who went with him as far as Tijuana.
Pues los primeros dos días que empezamos a caminar.
He says the first few days walking were some of the toughest.
Pues yo traía un par de zapatos de Salvador, pero ya los boté porque se me arruinaron. De ahí, tercer par de zapatos y pues contando unas chinas sería cuarto.
So he's on his fourth pair of shoes.
It was scary at times. At one point, a man from Honduras hitched a ride on a crowded truck and fell off and died. The caravan gained momentum as it moved north. People kept joining, many of them planning to seek asylum in the U.S. And it all blew up in the news. President Trump started tweeting about it and said he'd send troops to keep the migrants out.
I'm not letting them in. They're not coming in. All right? They're not coming in. We're going to do whatever we have to. They're not coming in.
Vladdy knows what the president is saying about the migrants.
Pues eso es discriminación, pues lo que está haciendo el presidente de los Estados Unidos. Él es hijo de, creo que su madre era emigrante. Y pues,
he says it's discrimination. He says Trump. He says that Trump also comes from a family of immigrants, that his wife is an immigrant.
But Vladdy's still determined to cross the border and enter the U.S. Someone's waiting there for him. His mom. I meet his mom, Veronica Aguilar, at the house she's staying in near San Francisco with a couple who took her in. She fled El Salvador a year before Vladdy did.
A causa del papá de mi hijo, yo ya había tenido problemas con las pandillas desde que yo decidí dejar de ir a verlo a la al penal o la detención.
Vladdy's dad was in prison for murder. He was in a gang. She tried to cut off ties with him, but he said, "You're being disloyal and keeping my son from me."
Ellas tienen que ir o las matan, porque ellos, los pandilleros, casi la mayoría que están detenidos, tienen obligadas a sus mujeres, aunque ellas no quieran ir.
She says if you're with a gang member who's locked up, you've got to stick with them or else, like being married to the mob. One time, she was walking home and this guy stopped her and said, "Put out your hand." And he put three bullets in her palm and said they'd be used to kill her.
Fue un día que me pusieron la pistola en la cabeza.
She said at one point, someone came and put a gun to her head on the street.
It's one bad thing after another. I read her asylum application later and realize she didn't even tell me about one of those prison visits when Vladdy's dad got angry and threw her and kicked her in the ribs. She says the prison guard just stood there. But she built a life of her own, too, and made ends meet.
Trabajé en un super.
She worked at a supermarket and sewed tights in a factory. And she was really into lifting weights. She showed me this video where she's at this competition. She's petite but strong, wearing black shorts and hot pink sneakers. And you see her prep herself to lift this huge barbell. Life's so different now in California, and Vladdy's not here with her. It's unthinkable sometimes, but she always meant to send for him once she figured out a place for them to live. When she crossed the border, she was detained for 7 months, but as soon as she got out, she started thinking about getting Vladdy here. When she heard about the big migrant caravan, she told him to join it.
Sí la veía como una opción.
It'd be safer with a group of migrants and not a smuggler. But she still worried about him the whole time.
Todos los días.
En un día, ¿cuántas veces?
4 o 5 veces.
No más que podía.
Y estaba escribiendo, ¿dónde están? Cuando tenían señal me contestaban. Cuando no era horrible porque yo estaba, Dios mío, ¿dónde está?
They talked 4 or 5 times every day. If he didn't call, she tried not to panic. She was really anxious when Vladdy crossed into Mexico from Guatemala on a raft made of tires and wood. When he finally reached the U.S. border, she was relieved, but knew it'd be harder for him to get across. It was getting tougher. The week we meet, U.S. Border Patrol agents tear gassed migrants on the border. President Trump sent troops there. And thousands of migrants in the caravan Vladdy came up in were stuck in Mexico.
Y es muy preocupada, un dolor en mi pecho, de saber dónde estaba mi hijo, de cómo estaba, si ya había comido.
Veronica says her chest physically hurts, wondering how he's doing, whether he's eaten. She hasn't seen him since she left El Salvador more than a year ago.
Tengo fe en Dios que todo va a estar bien. Solo hay que saber esperar.
I have faith in God, it'll all be fine. I just have to wait. Back in Tijuana, people are mobilizing to help migrants like Vladdy. Not far from his shelter, there's a building filled with volunteers. People are hauling donated water bottles, tents, and tampons.
Okay. Fourth floor?
I'm looking for a lawyer named Nicole Ramos. She's connecting other lawyers to migrants.
How do you explain what you're doing here?
We're essentially doing legal triage. We are providing refugees with information about the U.S. legal system.
I ask about Vladdy.
He's 15 years old. He's here alone. His mom is in the United States. What are some of the scenarios that he faces?
He would attempt to present himself at the port of entry where
here
you would,
in
Tijuana, where you would enter the United States at the San Ysidro port of entry. He would get to the gate, and most likely he would be met by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officers who would then turn him away.
She's trying to prevent that. I ask Ramos why she thinks the government is pushing back so hard at the border.
Because the U.S. government simply does not want any more immigrants.
The Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Protection declined my interview requests. But I talked to Andrew Arthur, a former immigration judge, about all this. He has a different take on why people are being turned away. He says it's about capacity.
There's a physical constraint, a space constraint. The ability to actually build additional screening areas would be a significant undertaking. And so you can send more asylum officers down there, but you're just not going to have the space capacity in order to screen those individuals at the ports of entry.
I bring up Vladdy and how his family's threatened by gangs.
He needs to resist that. He needs to go to the police and tell the police about the harm that he's suffered.
Oftentimes they say, you hear the police are involved with the gangs themselves and that the police won't help. What would you say to him then?
Then you'd go to a higher level police officer or alternatively seek relocation within the country.
Vladdy and his mom did move to another part of El Salvador though, and they say they still weren't safe, which is why he's here in Tijuana. For now, Vladdy's killing time at the shelter until the lawyers say it's time to cross. He's playing with this kitten the kids here rescued off the street.
Migra.
Migra. Di algo. Di algo, pues, di algo.
He's on his phone a lot, playing games and watching videos.
Uno se llama Clash of Clans y el otro Free Fire. Y también me gusta ver videos en Facebook. Son anime se llama más, sí.
¿Qué tipo de videos en Facebook? What kind of videos do you like to watch on Facebook?
Se llaman anime, son como caricaturas.
De Japón?
Sí. Oh. Son japoneses.
He's really into the Japanese anime videos.
After dinner one night, Vladdy and I talk about the future.
When you think of the United States, what do you think of?
Pues es un país grande y poderoso y lleno de inmigrantes. Y pues Estados Unidos, yo diría que no es lo que es. Gracias solo a los
inmigrantes. That the United States is a big country and it's a country of immigrants.
La economía de ahí porque...
I ask him how he pictures life if he makes it to the U.S.
Quiero estudiar porque el estudio lo es todo.
He says he'll go to high school.
Tenía que tener buenas notas o si no el teléfono me lo quita.
I have to get good grades or my mom will take away my cell. I believe it from getting to know Veronica. She's tough. But he wants to see her more than anything after more than a year apart.
Es mi mamá y que siempre va a hacer falta eso, sí. Ella siempre me ha cuidado bastante. Y pues, me hace bastante falta.
Claro. He says he's looking forward to seeing his mom, giving her a hug, living with her again.
That evening, one of Vladdy's friends pulls him aside, this young guy from Honduras. He takes out this little plastic bag with a metal chain inside.
It's a cross on the end of his chain. His friend's putting it on him.
It looks like a blessing. His friend says Vladdy will need all the luck he can get to make it to the U.S.
The journalism behind the Frontline Dispatch is possible thanks to the support of you, our listeners. Join us in supporting journalism that holds our leaders accountable and pursues the truth, wherever it may lead, by making a gift at frontline.org/dispatch. Thank you.
Hola. Yeah, soy Monica.
I head back to California and see Veronica. The days feel long. She's really missing her son. She often brings up not being there for his 15th birthday because she was in the U.S.
¿Sabes qué? Para tu cumpleaños te voy a hacer un pastel.
She says she's going to make him a cake anyway, a pink one. It's a private joke about quinceañeras, these big blowouts when young women turn 15. But they're not for guys, so Veronica ribs Vladdy that she'll make him a big pink birthday cake. It's something for her to look forward to. It's tough to be without Vladdy. Some days she doesn't want to leave the house. She shuts the curtains and watches movies.
Las 50 sombras de Grey.
So that's your escape. 50 Shades of Grey of all three. Yeah. Hey, that's okay. Está bien, no?
Está mejor el libro.
She says the book was better. In early December, Vladdy left the shelter for the border. One of the lawyers, Lindsay Tozlowski, tells me what happened.
You know, we wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to draw attention as a Central American migrant.
The lawyers think border agents are profiling migrants, so they make sure Vladdy would blend in, like a Mexican teenager going to the U.S. to go shopping or something.
And so much to his dismay, we found some khaki pants and a button-down plaid shirt for him, and I had to physically help him, like, tuck the shirt in and hike his pants up really high and put a belt on. So, and he was not used to it. I think he felt like he was in, like, a nerd costume.
It seemed to work. It fooled a cabbie they took to the port of entry.
The taxi driver was complaining about all the Hondurans who are trying to seek asylum at the border, and that's why all the lines were so long.
So the Mexican taxi driver didn't suspect that Vladdy was Central American himself?
No, definitely not. And I think Vladdy and the other young man in the car got quite a kick out of that, thinking how their outfits were helping them to blend in.
When they got to the port of entry, the lawyers told the Customs and Border Protection officers how they were with asylum seekers. One of the supervisors came out and said, sorry, no room. They were getting turned away.
When you say that they didn't have any room, it's because there was a long line of people there already, or?
No, there was no one there seeking asylum.
It was night.
It was maybe 8:30 at night. But there was no one there seeking asylum. It was a lot of people passing through, but they said that they didn't have the facilities to hold anyone. They also said that
it looked like it wasn't going to work. The lawyers started going back and forth, trying to persuade the CPP officers to let Vladdy in. The whole time, it's cold and windy, and everyone's waiting outside for hours. Then someone shows up, a member of Congress from Washington State, Representative Pramila Jayapal. She was in Tijuana touring the shelters and wanted to see the ports of entry up close.
Then I stepped forward and I started asking these questions of the Border Patrol agents. They got very irritated, I think, that I was asking questions. I had not identified myself as a Congress member yet because I wanted to see what happens if you're not a member of Congress.
She started pressing the officers, insisting.
She, you know, pointed out the same thing that I had pointed out, that they had a legal right to seek asylum.
Once I did identify myself as a member of Congress and really pushed, we were able to get, the Border Patrol agent said, we will take the two unaccompanied minors.
Meaning Vladdy and another kid. He was in. Scenes like this are playing out a lot at the border right now. Kids with lawyers, nerd costumes, trying to get into the U.S. one by one, like special packages with lots of handlers. Back in California, Veronica gets the news that Vladdy's made it through. U.S. officials call from the border. Your son is here with us.
Ya me llamaron para comunicarme con él, ya hablé con él.
She said she is so much more relaxed to know that he's here in the United States. They've spoken. He said he's fine.
And now she waits to see when he'll be released from the holding cell at the border. I call a few days later to see if she's heard from him again.
Aquí sigo esperando. No, sigo esperando.
Wow, hoy es día tres.
Dice que puede ser que me llamen hasta una semana.
No, no word. Veronica says she was told maybe it'd take a week for a call. More days pass. I check in with Veronica again.
We know where he is?
Sí. Se encuentra en Miami, Florida.
In Miami?
Sí.
¿Y cómo está?
Lejos, ¿verdad?
Veronica laughs because it's so absurd to her that she's in California and now Vladdy's in Florida, ping-ponging around the country. He's even had his first trip on an airplane courtesy of U.S. immigration officials. He's joining an estimated 10,000-plus other young migrants in federal custody, waiting for the government to decide what to do with them.
Aunque me dijo que estaba cansado, pero está bien.
She says he's tired, but fine. At least he's not being held at the border anymore. Veronica's been there, in the cells that migrants call ice boxes. But now a new chapter begins, another wait, to see when Vladdy can leave Florida. At some point soon, Vladdy will want a lawyer for his asylum case. The government doesn't provide one, a policy that's being debated right now before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I catch one of the hearings at the courthouse in San Francisco in December.
May be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are gathered here to have rehearing en banc in the case.
The place is packed. The ACLU is arguing for the kids to have court-appointed lawyers. Here's their attorney, Ahilan Aralanantham.
The government's primary position in this case remains that any child, even presumably 3 or 4-year-olds, can obtain fair deportation hearings without lawyers.
Then he argues that if you're a kid and don't have a lawyer, good luck getting asylum on your own.
Most of these children are eligible for some form of relief in the current system. And if they're going to have any serious possibility of obtaining it, they need legal representation.
The government lawyer, Scott Stewart, argues the U.S. shouldn't have to provide immigrant kids with court-appointed lawyers. Some of the judges really question that, even just on a practical level.
Right. 2 years old.
Never. I mean, what the law requires, Your Honor, due process in this context requires is a fundamentally fair proceeding.
And so your view is that there can be a fundamentally fair proceeding with a 2-year-old in front of an immigration judge with no representation at all?
Your Honor, that's not the position we're taking. We're taking that you
Stewart
need
argues that, in reality, 2 or 3-year-olds don't show up at court alone. There's always somebody, he says, a guardian, a pro bono lawyer, someone. The ability to find a lawyer is there, he says. It shouldn't be the government's burden to offer or pay for one. One of the judges says, really? What about an infant?
Yeah, what if you had a baby in a basket that couldn't even talk?
Your Honor, I do think that there are differences in what would be required for, say, a gregarious, outgoing, very sharp 17-year-old and the situation you're presenting.
Would a lawyer, an appointed lawyer, ever be required?
I can't think of a situation, Your Honor, but again, I
think... Then at the end, there's this moment. One of the judges' mics was left on, a hot mic. We overhear what she says as she leaves.
What a mess.
What a mess, she says. Nearly 2 weeks pass with Vladdy in Florida. It's almost Christmas. Vladdy calls Veronica from the shelter. They speak twice a week, 10 minutes each call.
Hello?
Hola, hijo, ¿cómo está?
Mal.
¿Por qué?
Tengo 3 días de estar enfermo.
Vladdy's sick, says he's achy, feels like he's got a fever. I ask Vladdy how many kids are there with him.
Supuestamente más de 1,000.
Más de 1,000.
More than 1,000. Does he know the name of the shelter?
Shelter.
No, pero digo el nombre completo.
Pues no sé, yo lo por shelter lo conozco.
Shelter, he says. I said, no, that's shelter in English. Do you know the name of the shelter? No, he says he doesn't. I ask him how long some of the other teens have been there.
¿Y conoce a muchachos allá que han tenido cuánto tiempo allá? ¿Que han llevado cuánto tiempo?
Pues aquí hay unos que tienen 4 meses.
4 months. Vladdy says he's meeting kids detained for 4 months. Then Vladdy's case manager wants to talk to Veronica.
Hola, buenos días. ¿Cómo está?
She tells Veronica, good news. They just need her fingerprints and she's done with the background check for reuniting with Vladdy. But bad news. Veronica has to go to Los Angeles tomorrow to get fingerprinted.
Oh my God.
Veronica's eyes fill with tears. It seems like a blip. Just go to LA and get fingerprints. But it's a big deal. Veronica barely has any money, so she needs to take a Greyhound overnight from Oakland to LA, about 11 hours. She'll do that so she doesn't have to pay for a hotel. But she's also supposed to have her monthly check-in with immigration officials tomorrow in San Francisco, so she has to be in 2 places at once.
Sí, voy.
I'll go, Veronica says. She'll figure it out somehow. If not, it means Vladdy could be in detention for weeks more. She takes deep breaths and tries not to snap.
Después de las huellas, ¿cuánto tiempo para que me den a mi hijo?
She asks, okay, how long after the fingerprints will it take me to be with my son? The case manager says it's up to the government. Off the phone, Veronica's worn down.
Ya quiero a mi hijo conmigo. Viene Navidad y no va a estar conmigo y eso me molesta.
She was hoping to be with Vladdy for Christmas. Another week goes by. Christmas passes. No Vladdy. I see Veronica at her home on New Year's Eve. She talked to Vladdy that morning.
Está un poco más animado, más relajado quizás.
He seems okay today, but she's getting frustrated with how long he's been in the shelter. She knows it can take a while. The average stay is 2 months, but she doesn't get why.
No entiendo qué pasa. O sea, ya les demostré que es mi hijo.
I don't understand what's happening, she says. I did the fingerprints. I've proved he's my son. She knows the government has to follow protocol, but she feels in the dark with the process. Veronica bursts out with frustration.
El albergue es un nombre para decir cárcel juvenil.
She said they're called shelters, but she considers them jails for children. I check in more. Weeks are passing. Vladdy's been in Florida for more than a month. He calls on Mondays and Wednesdays, a bit after 7 a.m. One day I get there in the middle of the call.
Buenos días.
Buenos días.
¿Ya está?
Veronica asks if he'd like a soccer ball once he's out.
¿Quieres que cuando salga te compre un balón?
Sí.
She tells Vladdy about some soccer fields nearby. She wants to get him excited about things he can do here, so he has something to look forward to. The call's done. They go by fast.
Vaya pues, mi amor, te amo mucho. Chao.
Chao.
Veronica says Vladdy's struggling with all the waiting around. He's a pretty restless kid.
Él nunca está quieto. Él siempre está haciendo algo.
But Veronica says that maybe in some odd, silver lining kind of way, he's getting something out of all of this. She tells me something that happened to Vladdy a couple of weeks ago at the shelter in Florida.
Tuvo un problema con un niño y un niño le pegó.
He said a kid was bothering people. Vladdy was sitting on a chair. The kid came and pulled it out from under him. Vladdy complained and the kid got really angry and punched Vladdy.
Y le pegó y dice mi hijo que le dijo, pues si quieres pégame tú, yo no te voy a pegar.
Vladdy said to the other kid, you want to hit me? Hit me. But I'm not going to hit you.
Eso para mí es un gran cambio de madurez de parte de él.
She's impressed how he handled it. She feels it was a sign of him becoming more mature. There's also some good news. An immigration lawyer is taking on Vladdy's asylum case pro bono. I ask Veronica a tough question. What if she doesn't win asylum in the U.S. and Vladdy does, and he's the only one allowed to stay?
Lo que yo sé es que al mío no puedo regresar. Eso es lo único que yo tengo claro. Tampoco mi hijo puede regresar.
What I know, the one thing that's clear, is that I can't go back to my country, and neither can my son. On one of those calls from the shelter in Florida, Vladdy asks if his mom can visit. I can't, she says. I can't afford it.
Te quiero mucho, hijo. Ya primero Dios, ya falta poco.
I love you. I miss you.
Mira este, cuando salgas te voy a comprar tu pastel de 15 años de color rosadito.
When you're back, I'll get your 15th birthday cake. A pink one. Just as we were publishing the story, I heard from Veronica. She'd been told Vladdy was going to be released and flown to Los Angeles. She was on her way to meet him.
This story was reported by Monica Campbell and produced by Jeb Sharp. Additional reporting by Emily Green, Sarah Kanosian, and Oscar Martinez. Thanks also to Brian Frank and Aaron Siegel McIntyre, as well as Andrea Crossan and the rest of the team at PRI's The World. For PBS's Frontline, Andrew Metz is our managing editor, Lauren Azell Kinlaw is our senior story editor, Sarah Childress is senior editor and reporter, Amy Gaines is our series coordinating producer, and our special counsel is Dale Cohen. The Frontline Dispatch team includes series producer Sophie McKibben, podcast editor Jeb Sharp, and production assistant Gabrielle Burbay. This episode was mixed by John Evans and Matthias Bossi at Brick Hill Studios. Music in this episode by Stellwagen Symphonette. I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of Frontline. I hope you'll keep listening to the Frontline Dispatch at frontlinedispatch.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.